Today we're talking about how it all started. And you know, so one of the questions I get asked a lot is, how did this all start? And we thought maybe the best way to do that was to go back to the history. And Mulisha Mudise here, who is more handsome, younger, and everything more than I am, he has a task. It's being taped, so just have to say your name and call and kick it off.
My name is Mulisha Mudise, and I left South Africa in 1978, and now live in the Bay Area. So I think to understand the apartheid system is we have to go back when the first settlers came to South Africa. So the plight of and state of affairs of the African people in Southern Africa has been when the first settlers came in 1652. And that's when John van Riebeeck of the Dutch East Indies Company, they were making a halfway stop to the East Indies. And they decided that they're going to now settle. But then, prior to that, the Africans, the indigenous people in Southern Africa and the Cape, they had contact with white people, which were the Portuguese, who also made a halfway stop for refreshments in the Cape to proceed on to the West Indies. The only difference with the Dutch, they decided the weather was conducive for them. And if you've been to the Cape, it's the most beautiful country. And they decided this is going to be home for them. So that's when the problem started. They decided to stay. And the problem really started in 1659, when the expansion and the intrusion of the white settlers were now trying to expand further inland and displacing people. At first, the Africans decided, no, we can live with the people here. You know, we have so much to share because they've had these encounters with whites. But now the difference, now these people were settling. And the difference was not just the settlement. They started to copulate with the local people because these were really merchants. And they had no females in the ship. So on these stopovers, probably the last 2 to 3 weeks or a month. So they started having contact with the local women, and that's now started creating problems. And that's when we are going to be where we are, and as the week goes on, we'll explain why some of the whites, if you are 100% white, you won't have a problem with identity. And this is where now we're going to deal with some of these people who are the Afrikaners, they call themselves, are not really white, because if you go back in their generations, like Dumsan was saying yesterday, they started losing color. So it always pops up now and again. So let's go back to 1652, that's when the first settlers came to South Africa. And then in 1658, they started having to bring the Chinese and the Indians from East Asia, because the local people were not interested in working for them. So, and the Dutch had already had contact with this other people they were dealing with in the East Indies. So they were bringing those under the pretense of this lovely land only to come and enslave people. So slavery did exist in South Africa too, but it wasn't really directed to the local people. They had to import slaves from India and the Chinese to work on the railroads and the mines. So that's why the little populace of the Asian people we have came through South Africa because of the trade. So I guess if we had the Suez Canal in the 1600s, South Africa would be a free country, because the only way for them to go to the East Indies, they have to go through the Cape of Good Hope around the whole continent. So that's where we are with apartheid today. So I'm just trying to get you to that. Then in 1717, the Dutch East Indies Company, they decided that they have to increase the white population in South Africa by guaranteeing free passage of white families to go and settle in South Africa, mainly the Cape, because this was a settlement area. Now we had the Khoi Khoi, who were indigenous people in the Cape. Mainly they were headsmen taking care of their cattle. It's not that they were not nomads, like they try in the history books trying to portray. When the whites came to South Africa, there was nobody. So if they came to South Africa and the Khoi Khois were not there, they wouldn't have had this resistance battles of expansion. So that's where we started to have problems with the white settlers. 1717, if you count from 1652, even prior that, they didn't have their women, and they were copulating with the local women. Now 1717, then they started to encourage white migration to South Africa. So this is where we are picking up the resistance of the local people. And then the Khoi Khoi had problems now, because some of them were, in order to live on the land, they were supposed to be now working for the white settlers. So, and they were treated very badly, till in 1820, when the first ordinance was passed, that they have to end their own economic way, by the means they know how, than to be working for the settlers. Because what was happening now, the settlers were mistreating the Khoi Khoi. They first take your land, take your cattle, and then have type of a plantation. You have to work maybe 3 months in order for you to stay here, and which is was really foreign to the Khoi Khoi people. So with the expansion going on, 1779 to 1781, the Xhosa War began in the Eastern Cape, which was the major one. Now, again, we have to bear in mind, there were the French Huguenots which were coming, and we had the German people who were coming, and all these people are expanding. And most of those came as contract laborers. After their contract was finished, they had a choice, either go back to European countries or to stay in South Africa. Most opted to stay. And then they started again to marry with the local people, and they were now expanding. And now the resistance, when you moved to the Cape, there was a populace of the Xhosa people, and who didn't like what was going on. So that's why these wars and treaties started going on. And as the treaties were proceeding, nobody honored the treaty. All the histories of the treaties didn't go too far. Their life expectancy was two years. So we had these major battles with confronting apartheid from the 1600s. And in 1820, the British decided to send 5,000 immigrants too. So again, we are confronted with the scramble for Africa. Everybody finally has discovered this land, and they are going there. They were going there because of the weather. We haven't got to where they're going to explore the mineral resources of the country. So they are just going in to run away from whatever they have in their respective countries. And that's how it started. Then, 1795, the British now are taking over from the Dutch. So they colonized the Cape, because the Dutch came first, it's their territory now. The British come and they decided they like it, so they fight the Dutch and they take over. So now it's no longer a battle between one and one. We are faced now with three people. There's the white group, both of them, one British, one Dutch, and then you have the local people, and they're fighting on your land. So that went on. The second battle broke up again, 1834 to 1835, which was the Xhosas again now want to wipe out the Dutch, because the British have defeated the Dutch in the Cape. Now the Dutch decided to have a great trek. A great trek, it means everybody here in Holden Village would get into our wagons where we're moving north where we won't be threatened by anybody. So this is just the white community. So the great trek started then. Now as they ventured further inland, that's when they were encountered again another battle with the Khoisans. Most of them were killed. And that's how the history started. Then in 1838, the great one started, the Battle of Blood River. And that's not too far from where Dumsani comes from. And that's when now you confronted, which is now the Zulu tribe. Don't buy the myth of saying the majority of the South Africans are Zulu. We are all Africans, and it's again, we're trying to fight this thing of divide and conquer mentality. So here we dealt with the Zulus. The Zulus, bear in mind the Cape, they are moving further inland and they don't know which direction they're going. So they move further to the east-north of the country. They run into the Zulus. They were defeated by the Khoisans. Now they run into the Zulus. And they are still in the Cape. It's all coastal areas we're talking about. The battle there didn't last too long. It lasted almost 3 weeks. And the whole river, as history puts it, turned into blood. That's why they call it the Battle of Blood River. And there was no truce. The whites, the settlers, decided to move on. And so the Zulus were freed from the expansion of the whites. But it didn't stop there. It still proceeded. They went north, where I guess they got into the country as they were moving as settlers, so nobody said much till they started to expand. That's when you get threatened. You come in, live in my house, now when you try to tell me you have to restrict yourself to the kitchen, that's when we have problems. So this is where it started. Okay, now let's go to the 1900s. 1905, the South African Native Affairs Commission advocates territorial segregation between whites and blacks. Now we are institutionalizing apartheid and we have to start to the core. Now in between, don't forget, there's been the discoveries, they're moving up north, the settlers, there's been gold, there's been the Anglo-Boer War and everything else. So 1905, they are really addressing the issue between white and black. The classification of the races kicks off here. And tomorrow we're going to go on from 48 to now. So this is just to give you an overview of a background. And again, don't forget the similarities here are very similar to the blacks when they came to Virginia as slaves. And the occurrences of the dates are more or less parallel. Okay, 1910, we established the USA. That's the Union of South Africa. So that's when the big heads got together and they started the Union of South Africa. And then again, the British were getting involved in here. And don't forget the Anglo-Boer Wars and the treaties have been signed. And we finally found out we have gold in the Transvaal, we have diamonds in the Orange Free State, and we can have as much wine as we can in the Cape. And the weather agrees year round. So, and the population is growing. Then we get to 1948. The nationalist power gets into power. And in 48, that's when we'll pick up from there to now, because this is now the crucial time when everything has been set. Destinies of the blacks, or rather the Africans, and any other people of color has been dictated by minority government. And then again, I really have to emphasize by saying, in South Africa, the thing is, you don't have the mobs you used to have here. in the South to deal with the racial issues. In South Africa, you have the police and the army to take care of that for you. And this is where some of these things happened in the past, historically, from before 1652, before the actually first settlers came, because we had contacts with the whites in the 1400s who were passing through. I just wanted to give you an overview how we evolved to where we are today. Thank you.
Well, I have a very easy job, and, you know, since Molefe did everything, I thought I would put in some more human faces, because, you know, history sometimes is dates and events and whatever.
Can you say something?
Well, the map of Africa, and I know you guys know it, but the map, oops, this one doesn't write. The map of Africa looks like this from home, when you look at it from home. This is where we are, this is what we're talking about, this is the United States, and there's Holden over here, this is South America, Central America, this is the Atlantic, this is the Indian Ocean, and this is the Pacific. Ta-da! There we found it, right? This is Europe. Okay. What Molefe was saying, in the 1400s, they used to sail over here. Of course, they're going here. Where's Fred? Fred is not here. Fred Rajan. And, you know, that's the Soviets, and there's India there with all those lovely spices and whatever. So they sail over here, and they're going that way to go get the spices. But the boats are slow. Everybody dies on the way. So some guy sits up in the Dutch colony and says, hey, it's a brilliant idea. Let's start the halfway stop. So I say, yeah, let's start the halfway stop here. They call it the Cape of Good Hope. Why is it called the Cape? Because if you see a detailed map of South Africa, there's a land that juts out into the ocean. It's windswept, it's dry. So they land here in 1652, as I said. And they are led by a medical doctor and a preacher. You always need a preacher to justify what you're doing, right? And they find people, they are there, they land, and, you know, the rain stop, and they look through the bush like here. They see people come out of the bush, and they are men. So they call them bush men, right? Yeah, they came out of the bush, they are men, they are bushmen. But they were bush women, but they said women don't count as usual, right? And we gotta count the men, don't we? So they are bush men. And the bushmen, as you know, they are actually, the bushmen are called the sun people. I say, yeah, mainly they lived in caves, and they are great painters. If you go to any library, you'll see them. And then after a while, they see what he was talking about. I don't know whether he got it, because he was being clever. The Khoi people. The Khoi people are black, they are tall, and they are very dark. So what do? This is, they call the Khoi people Hottentots. Aha! This is descriptive. Hot, because they are black, right? And then, in Africans, tots, because they are tall. So we could call them black and tall, hot and tots. Ta-da, we have another one in here. But in fact, they're Khoi people. So what do? These are a bunch of men, so they decide, they try to marry the bushmen, and, you know, even though there was no legislation against gays, it didn't quite work that way. And, you know, so they decided to marry the Khoi women. And we have children. Now, the children are not exactly white, and they are not exactly black. So what do we have? We have colored children. So we've been talking about colors in South Africa. Adam Small, who is a great South African poet, says colors were born 9 months after the arrival of the first white man. And, you know, so we have the colored people. Now you know why we're talking about colors. But the history of South Africa is as divided as the country is today. Now, if you remember what South Africa looked like, South Africa looks like this, right? This is the bottom of the continent. There's a range of mountains, which is like the Rockies, called the Drakensberg. If you can't read my handwriting, relax. Sometimes I can't read it too. And you know, so let's put the lines there. So these mountains are sort of like dividing the country. So they land here at the Cape of Good Hope. This is desert. You've heard of Namibia, right? Lutherans are supposed to know Namibia. Namibia is named after a desert, the Namib desert. That's why they won't leave Namibia alone, because it has all those precious minerals, right? And but this is all semi-desert. So African people don't live on this site in the desert. African people live off the land. All the African people are living here. There are Sotho people out there who are gold miners, and they own the gold mines. And the Zulus are here in the middle, and the Xhosas are here, and they own the diamond mines. The whites come here, and they stay. And this become an outbreak. You remember seeing a movie called Papillon, which is about the French? And,
yes.
And one of you, you know, the French used to send their outcasts to French Guiana and all. Well, the outcasts, all those Lutherans who were dissidents, and saying, you know, Luther was right, they sent them to South Africa. And you know, the Methodists, they came to say in the 1800s, you know, start preaching it the wrong way, they send you down there. And you know, so everybody comes and stays down here. And of course, as he said, what did you say, 1790 something? The British come and occupy this. Now remember, we're not talking about that side right here, right? This is a two-finger split. We're not talking about it. We're coming there. The British come and they occupy this. And then, of course, John Wesley and all those good Methodists, and I can say that since I'm a Methodist. And, you know, we're going to be sectarian this morning. And, you know, they all decide, no, we're going to free the slaves. You know, slavery is wrong, and there's a whole movement in Europe against slavery in the 1830s. 1834, they finally decide in Europe slaves are to be freed, and the decree, of course, goes down here, into the Cape. The slaves are to be freed. But you see, all those people who came here, the whites who came here, are dependent on slavery. So when they come and say free the slave, they say, well, forget it, buddies, we're going to live. They hitch their ox wagons, and they come across these mountains. And as they come across the mountain, that's what you are saying, and they come into all wars and that type of thing. Okay? So that's what it's like. But now let's go and tell this side of the story. You see, this is the white side. This is South Africa. This is the white side of history. Oh, by the way, you probably met South Africans who told you when we came, the country was empty. You know, who's crazy enough to live in a desert anyway? And you know, so, you know, and you know, they say the country, I mean, that's exactly what they mean. There were not too many people here, but there were millions of them. Now let's tell the story, this side of the mountain. Remember, we're here on the Rainbow Mountain top. And you know, and I can tell you a little bit about the Zulus because I'm more familiar with that. Way back, now he started in 1650, way back in the 9th century, there lived a guy who was a chief called Malandela. Malandela simply means the one who's being followed. And Malandela had this vision that one day he would unite the whole of Africa into one nation. Of course, it's difficult enough to unite one congregation. And so he didn't succeed. But in his dream of success, he named one of his children Zulu. Zulu meaning the heavens, the sky, thunder, and you know that's what the word Zulu means. Simply meaning those who will rise to the heavens. And this is in the 9th century. Around 1497, a Portuguese sailor, as he was telling you, a Portuguese sailor is sailing all the way. And you know, he ends up in Mozambique where there's Maputo, where they used to have a port, and he goes all the way. And he comes, his name is Vasco da Gama. One day, on the 25th of December, 1497, Vasco da Gama is sailing back home, and there's a huge storm. It blows away his boat, and the boat lands on this place. On the south, this is the Indian Ocean, by the way, right? Remember? And he lands in this place. He finds tons of black people who are all different clans. And he lands on the 25th of August, I mean of December, 1497. What does he do? He names the place where he landed Natal, which you've heard about, right? Natal, which is part of South Africa. You know what Natal means in Portuguese? Christmas. So he names this place where he landed Christmas. So I was born in a place called Christmas. Isn't that crazy? I was born in Zurich. And you know, he goes back and he says, hell, these folks here are wild, you know? You know, you don't need to build a border. They are wild, they are tall, they carry spears, they kill everyone. Let's forget them. And you know, so they leave us alone, and we live alone. But in 1834, when these guys come over, they come across us. And we have fights, which he has so eloquently put. And in September 9th, 1838, that's a year of blood river, right?
Yeah.
September 9th, 1838, about 400 wars. Okay, now let's go back to names. If we're going to call people names, let's do it in style. Really do it. When they came, they were settlers, right? In 1652. Then they live off the land. They became farmers like in Minnesota and Idaho and those places. They became Boers, which is a Dutch term meaning those who live from there. Today they call themselves Afrikaners, which is white African, which is a misnomer, right? But when they came, they were settlers. And so now we're at a stage where they are Boers, which is, you know, September 9, 1838 is a Sunday. And the Zulus have been killing the Boers and chasing them around. And they end up on the bend of a river. The river that bends. And this river is called Nome, N-C-O-M-E. And they came here, they form a lager. You've heard this in your churches. Well, white people will just go back into the lager. Let those blacks be happy that they are not in the lager yet, right? That's what they say all the time. They form a lager, which is simply means you circle the wagons. And this is where South African history becomes wild. If you think Rambo only was created in 88, you should read South African history. There's a lot of Rambo there. I think Sylvester Stallone just went back and read that. Anyway, they say, now this is their side of the story, and I'll tell you what my grandmother told me. They say they circled the wagons. There were 400 of them. They had about 300 rifles and one cannon. And on Sunday morning, Cyril Siliers, who is called the prophet of the great tract, old man with a long white beard, opens up the Bible and reads Genesis 9, which if you came to Bible study this morning, I told you, you're going to be reading our history in advance. He sits down and reads Genesis 9, and it talks about the covenant I make with you and all creatures of the world. He forgets all creatures of the world. So blacks are not all creatures of the world. They are somewhere down there. He makes a covenant and he prays. And this is a great prayer in South Africa. The government pushes. God, if you help me and help my brothers and sisters with defeat black people, we shall forever remember the day of defeat as the day of the covenant. If you arrive in South Africa on December 16 on any day, it is an official holiday called the Day of the Covenant. We call it Dingaan's Day after the
bear in mind, as he was saying, the Boers, the farmers here, the classification we had since they came, we were now natives.
Right,
so
right.
Try to concentrate on the terms.
Let me pull that up. Repeat it again. I don't think they got it. We won't test them, but I know they didn't get it.
As the settlers came, with the chain of events, we are natives all this time. So as we go, as the terms change, how the whites classify themselves to be Afrikaners, our classification as Africans changes too. So bear that in mind as we go.
Yeah, in other words, they become Africans. They find us there, they suddenly become Africans. We are non-Africans.
What are the blacks called at that point?
Natives.
Yeah,
they decide to call us names. That's what they call us. But we won't allow them to call us that. But anyway, let's go back to this Sunday because it's really key to what you want to learn. It's a Sunday morning. Sarah of the Villas opens up Genesis 9, reads it, and says, you know, the covenant I make with God is that if we defeat the Zulus, we'll be okay and we'll remember that day forever. And it's September, and they pray. September 10, the Zulus are not coming. September 20, the Zulus are not coming. And in October, the Zulus are not coming. So I don't know, what did God say? November, what did God say? And suddenly, on Sunday, December 16, 1838. Now, this is where the story comes. Depends who you want to listen to. They claim, this is now Rambo shooting everybody in Southeast Asia, right? They claim 40,000 Zulus came. I mean, one Boer for every 10,000. And every one of them killed at least 10,000. I mean, they just wiped out everybody. Not even a scratch among them. And God was on their side. That's why you get such a biblical justification. When I grew up, I was taught about the heroes of Blood River. And I remember going to school, and at home they teach you about the heroes of Blood River. You go to school, they say the whites won. And I went back to my grandmother, I said, which is true? She said, son, don't worry. Never read their history. The war was not, did not end. It was postponed until we get our own fire sticks. And you know, so I studied mathematics from that day on. And anyway, but this river Ngome became Blood River, as he said. It supposedly turned into blood. But the Zulus were, I mean, the Afrikaners were driven away. Where do they go? They go into what they call the Transvaal. They cross a river called Lekwa, where the Sotho people have been living for centuries. And they name it Trans, meaning cross, Vaal, because the waters were murky. So Vaal means murky. So they crossing the murky river. So that's where they set up and they form a Transvaal Republic. And here are two things which I need to quickly say because our time is gone. 1886, the Boers take over the gold mining from the Sotho people. They are led by two Boers, one called Johannes Meyer. The other one is called Johannes Rissig. They take over this place in October from the people who live there. And they name the city that they found what? Johannesburg. Yeah, we have Johannesburg. Hey, somebody's listening. In 1879, an Anglican bishop has a son who's sickly, who doesn't want to learn, and stubborn little kid, and decides, well, Cecil, I'm going to send you to Africa to learn to become a gentleman farmer. So Cecil John Rhodes ends up in South Africa in the cave. Cecil John hears about this place up the road where there are diamonds. They go, they kill off all the Xhosa people. Cecil John Rhodes become instantly the richest man, so rich from these diamonds that he used to sail to Oxford just to go attend classes and come back to mine the diamonds. And he leaves a bunch of money which all of us parents hope our sons win to get the Rhodes scholarships and end up at Oxford. Right? And you remember why there was a big outcry when the first black, I think it was the first black woman in this country who was appointed to the Rhodes scholarships, and she turned it down because of what Cecil John did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but anyway, then we go into 1910 as it did. But there's another thing. In 1905, how could we miss this? In after the Boers left, now there's a young woman whose father had just died, just where the Afrikaners were living, called Victoria. So Victoria assumes the throne of England. And Victoria is a young little girl, and she becomes Queen of England. And Victoria has a dream that my father George, who died early, had a dream one day the Union flag would fly from the Cape to Cairo. And you know, so after they colonized the Cape and the Zulus had driven the Boers away, they decide, England decides, we're going to colonize Zululand. What does Zulus resist? On the 26th of January, 1879, Zulus say, well, the only way you settle it on the plains of a place called Isandra. So we have the Anglo-Zulu War, the Battle of Isandra. And now it's interesting, if you go to your video store, you can get two tapes on Zulu. There's one with Michael Caine on 1879, where we wiped out the entire British army. The only way they found out everybody was dead was through a missionary who sent the white back. And in England, they had a cry that they collected from the colonies, Canada, somebody said it was from Canada. They recruited from Canada, from Ceylon, from India, all the soldiers they could get, and they came back in June of the same year, 1879, in Ulundi, and finally defeated the Zulu Empire. So if you go to the video store, there's a movie called Zulu, which is about us winning. There's a movie called Zulu Dawn, which is about us losing. So it depends which one. The one about us winning is always played on TV at 3 a.m. But after they defeated us, but you remember that the Boers have gone to the Transvaal, they have gone, they said, the British said, no, we were more equal than them. So in 1899 to 1902, they decide we will have an Anglo for British Boer War, right? And the battle rages. There were battle of white people. It rages and rages on. How many of you saw a movie some years ago called Breaker Morant? Remember?
Yeah,
if you can get a copy of it, it shows in a way. Well, they have the Anglo. By 1902, they say, hey, man, why are we... Oh, wait. In here, they do what Hitler was to do later. Aha, Hitler just built the gas ovens. But he had learned from the British, you see. Because the British built concentration camps. They didn't have gas, but they had concentration camps. They packed in all the Boer women and children. That's why in South Africa the biggest symbol is the Boer woman. They packed them in and they starved them to death. That's why the Boers don't trust the English. They trust the blacks even less. They packed them all into the concentration camps and they hanged everybody. I think in Breaker Morant, the story, if I still remember, is about the hanging of somebody. Somebody might help. Anyway. They put everybody in there, in the concentration camps, and they use the Bible, a young man called Malan, who later becomes, when he takes over tomorrow, whenever we take off, we will tell you about apartheid. He gets born in here. God was on our side in Blood River in Genesis 9, is going to be with us somewhere. And you know, they come out of there, they decide, hey, we have enough gold and diamonds, we need blacks to go to the mines, like my father to become a migrant worker, right? So, they introduce poll tax. We pay poll tax in South Africa even though we don't vote. So they introduce poll tax. So you can make these people pay tax. And if you don't have poll tax, you go to jail. And if you don't go to jail, you go, ah, oh, there he is. Look, here's a pass. Some of you have never seen a pass. This is fantastic. You brought your pass along. This is a stamp for poll tax. He paid his tax in 1977. And there's a stamp here, permitted to remain in the prescribed area. Remember yesterday I was telling you, we'll pass it around so you can see for yourself. Permitted to be in a prescribed area. See, we don't like, permitted to remain in such and such an area. And you know, so you can pass the pass around so you see what they're talking about. Anyway, they introduce the poll tax. If you don't pay that, you go to jail. And a Zulu chief called Bambata sharpens the spears again and fights the British. Of course, they grab him and they hang him. And what do the British do? They take a picture of his head. They make a postcard, which is sent all over. You can still see them in the... if you go to England and you go to the lab, you can find a postcard of this guy. In 1910, they form what you told. But why apartheid? Here's a quick thing. Now, remember, let's go back. The Boers fought the Zulus, and the Khoisans and the Sutus, all black people. So they are enemies, right? It's one group of enemies. The Boers fought the British, and they are enemies of the British. So they have two sides of enemies. The British on one side, the black people on the other. But in 1910, they form a union of racism. A union that combines the Boers on one hand, even though they are holding their nose sitting next to the British. But you know, they're saying, well, maybe it's enough because you're keeping the blacks away, right? But the theologians here, there's a book which you must read. Oh, it's called Puritans in Africa. It's a paperback from Penguin. If you read that, it's better than Mission. The theologians are saying, no, let's go back to our roots of the Bible. You're wrong. 1910 comes, goes by. Black people make it worse. In 1919 to 1920, they formed the Industrial Workers Union, a huge union. That's why I'm a union man. And you know, they formed strikes.
And what do? The Boers join the Communist Party.
Never mind, they call every one of us communists today.
They join the Communist Party in South Africa. The oldest Communist Party out of Russia is in South Africa. Who belongs to it? P.W. Botha and Forstand and all the other people. Their slogan is, white workers of the world unite to save a white South Africa. You know, never mind this Marxist thing. And you know, so they form it through racism. And then by 1925, they try and push through the Masters and Servants Act. You guess who are the masters, you guess who are the servants. And you know, after that act is formed, they break away from the Communist Party because they discover, my God, there are too many people in this party. And you know, and which is why they have such passionate hate against them. But come the 1930s, this is very key. Come the 1930s. Okay, let's go back. And you know, I'm treating you like a class because I talk in universities all the time. This is the way I talk. Anyway, just bear with me. We have enemies here. The Afrikaners are enemies to the British. The British are enemies to everybody. And the Afrikaners are enemies to the blacks. So you have all this faction. In 1930, you remember what the Shah did? One of the biggest mistakes the Shah did was he made a mistake. He sent all these students to study in the United States. And they came here and they said, my God, they have a Bill of Rights here. You know, the freedom of speech. And they went back to Tehran and said, how come we can't speak up? And so if you want to be a tyrant forever, don't let your kids study in the United States. So the Afrikaners decide, now what do we do with our first generation college educated youth? We can't send them to study at Oxford and Cambridge because we hate the British. We can't send them to the United States because we hate blacks in the United States. You know, they allow blacks in the United States. We don't want them. In fact, you know what? When I went to school, I did geography. I used to draw all the maps of the United States. They never mentioned that there were black people. I used to plot the Mississippi to New Orleans. They never mentioned. The first time I knew there were black people was when Sidney Poitier came in the early 50s to do, what was the movie? The Lisa Fire Down? Yeah. No. That was a Peyton's book. Anyway, let's go back here because next thing they'll ring the bell. So in the 30s, they are deciding, where do we send our children? We can't send them to America. They're black folks and we don't like. We can't send them to you. What do they do? Guess. Nobody guesses. Germany. They send them to Germany and to Italy, where there's the rise of fascism and Nazism. Among the most brilliant Afrikaners ever, a young man called Johannes Geraldus van Rensburg. Brilliant guy, very racist, brilliant. Hitler starts storm troopers, right? Okay. No, never mind, you can't read my handwriting. Stormtroopers. They come back to South Africa, they form Storm, same word, Yayos. Same haircuts, brown shirts, and everything. Hitler forms the Third Reich. They form the Bruderbund, the Band of Brothers. If you can take 45 minutes and see the video I brought of Beyers Naudé, because he talks about being into this, and he was one of those youth. And you know, so they form Storm Yayos. This is where they get blonde, blue eyes, and all that type of thing. In 1948, what will even blow your mind? You know, we'll talk about Soweto, he'll talk about Soweto, he was involved in that. But in 1943, there's a big youth strike, like they're locking up kids now, between the Afrikaner kids and the English kids, what to fight over language. And they use the same slogans black kids are using in 1976. They say, we don't want to study everything in English, we want to study in our native tongue, Africa. But in 1948, that union where they were holding their noses in 1910, they come into a whites-only election, they split. These guys win. They think, aha, what policy can we do? After all, they studied among the fascists and the Nazis. They come with a policy they call apartheid. Apartheid. Apartness, which is what Hitler was trying to do. So that's the sermon for today.
So this is your time now for questions and answers. There are two of us here, so we can
see the tape. How can we see the videotape? When will it be shown?
Oh, we were going to show it at this session at 4 p.m. tomorrow, but now they want to move it. I don't know. They have to show it before Saturday because I leave Saturday. We'll ask Jody. They are working it out. Any other questions? We both are here. Yes.
What happened during the Second World War?
Oh, yes. The Second World War. Oh, my God. Somebody was following attention. I told you they are Nazis, right? During the Second World War, and our fathers, blacks and whites, they lied to black people, just like they lied to black people here. Remember? They said to black soldiers, yeah, if you fight in World War I and you come back, you know, we won't discriminate against them. They lied to them. They didn't say this. Say, if you go fight Hitler, Rommel. See, we were given Rommel in Tobruk. Those who were in the war would remember. And, you know, so they gave us a piece of Rommel and said, go fight Rommel up in North Africa. And black people joined. But the guys who are in power today, P.W. Board, Foster, who's dead, Pete Mayer, joined with the Nazis. The strongest Nazi support outside of Germany comes where? In South Africa. You remember years ago they had a miniseries called The Holocaust? You remember in the Holocaust they were distributing little pamphlets? They were printed in South Africa. By who? Dr. Verwoerd, who's very well known in South African history, was born in Austria, was a Nazi. And you know, those are the folks who published this literature. So you see, if you look at the policy, they had to be interned. One of the internments during the war was in South Africa. You know, this is where the strongest Nazi support came from. And Jan Smuts, for those of you who are old enough to remember, Jan Smuts was a general with all the other generals. Jan Smuts was an African as prime minister of the Union government, had committed South Africa to the war. But there were a lot of people who were not in power. That's why, in fact, in 1948, they won the elections, because they were against them. Anybody else?
Yeah, I have a question.
Oh, please, yes. Yeah, try and speak up, because it's hard to see with the light.
I was taught that part of the reason why the Great Trek was successful was because of the consequences of, and I don't know, the pronunciation is probably wrong, but two great Zulu leaders, Dingus Vayo and Shaka. Can you respond to that?
No, it's the other way down. The Great Trek, you see, these guys come across the mountain, right? And they come across the Zulus. Now, if you want the story of Shaka, now, one of the things we don't do when we tell history, whether it's American history, is the role of women. Women in South Africa have laid their lines on the struggle. I indicated to you last night that black women are classified as minors. I thought somebody would ask and say, why are they perpetual minors? And you know, but the reason is because of the struggle they put up. Now let me quickly tell you the story of Shaka. I told you there was a guy in the 9th century, Malandela. He has a child who's called Zulu, right? Ta-da! It goes on. In 1779, this is a nice, warm, sensuous story. In 1779, a young man, an older man, who is a chief, whose name is Senzangakhona. I know you've seen this in your TVs, which is the unholy history, which is told from the African perspective. Black people are. Senzangakhona is married to several wives. He goes out and seduces a young woman, whose name is Nandi. And he leaves Nandi pregnant. Now, about 50 years before this day, there was famine in Southern Africa. And the famine in Southern Africa devastated everybody. And when there was less food for everybody, what did they do? The powerful rulers started passing laws to control who? Women. Whenever in doubt in a society, control women. I mean, it's the same thing. Look at the Mexican people who come across the border. Who are the restrictions they make? Those Mexican women who come and give birth in Houston and, you know, overstaff our hospitals and our daycare center. So they did the same thing. The bigger clans, they formed rules for women. And they dictated how women were going to make love. You know, when they can have sex and how they're going to have sex. And, you know, of course, one of the things was that when a woman has sex, she shouldn't lay on her back. It's very important in Zulu history. It's celebrated in poetry and everything.
Senator Ngakoona convinces, especially a young woman, and an unmarried woman was not supposed to lay on her back. Senator Ngakoona seduces this young lady to lay on her back. She becomes pregnant. Her own family disowns her. And Senator Ngakoona disowns her. There's no room for unwed mothers. They are not needed. It's a big, terrible thing. What does she do? She leaves and is sent back to Senator Ngakoona. Now, when she's pregnant, the Zulus say to her, as a way of humiliating, they say, oh no, she's not pregnant. She's not pregnant. She has a growth in her stomach. This is what happens to women who are sexually improper in their ways. She's not pregnant. She has a growth in her stomach, which we Zulus call ishaka, which is like a growth. Nandi says, God help me after 9 months. Let me deliver my baby. She delivers a baby, and she names the baby Shaka, as a reminder of the humiliations she suffered. And among the people who comes to Nandi's aid is a woman who's very good in Zulu history. Well, you have to read my book very soon. You'll get all this. Called Kabai. Kabai was a tall black woman, as women are in Zululand, was a governor. And in history, they say she could kill men just as easy as men could kill each other. I mean, that's how dangerous she was, I tell you. Kabai takes her in, and Nandi brings up a child, Shaka, and said, my son, they humiliated us. The worst thing you can ever say to an African person is that you are nobody's child. You know, in Africa, we don't yes, we do have children born out of wedlock, but they are not disowned. Because the worst thing you can be as a human being is be disowned. So, he says, my son, you are disowned, you are nobody's child, that's why you're called. This kid grows up with, I'm going to revenge for my mother. You wait until I'm okay. He goes into the military, kills a lion by himself. Senator Ngakoona dies. This guy goes there. He takes over Senator Ngakoona. He remembers his great-grandfather's decree about people will rise to the heavens. He forms a Zulu nation, and he starts a revolution that starts around 1720-something. He died in 28. So it starts around, say, 1720. I didn't bring my notes here. He starts a revolution that sweeps, of all the revolutions in the world, there's the French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Zulu Revolution. You don't read about the Zulu Revolution a lot. But he starts a revolution that kills a lot of people trying to bring them under his power. And they form this Zulu nation. Well, the bad side of this, which is what you see on TV, Shaka never married, was so attached to his mother that when his mother died, he went crazy. He started killing people. He started destroying the whole nation that he had. Guess who wiped him out? Mkabayi. That lady who had saved him organizes Shaka's two brothers to go in and kill him. And they kill him. And Dingane comes. Now, one thing Shaka had done, his whole policy was based on the being of the person, right? And he brought women into the armies. Among the most famous war generals in Zulu history are women. Women were in the army until the 17... What's very interesting, he dies in 1728, in September 24, 1728. And his brother, half-brother Dingane, comes and takes over. And the first thing Dingane does, he says, the first thing I'm going to do, dismantle the women armies, especially this lady here who's dangerous, man. So he dismantles that, and look at this. 1836, the Boers come across. Less than 10 years later, they find a weak Zulu land because the women's armies have been depleted. I mean, half of the fighting force has been depleted. They run over us. There are those of us, and some historians are beginning to write, that the problem was we took women out of the army. And that's how we lost the country. But that's another story. Dingi Swayo is just a descendant yet. It has nothing to do with the Great Trek. So that's not quite true. I thought I'd just say that quickly. One more question before they ring the bell. Anyway, tomorrow we'll take over. He'll take you over on, what are we doing tomorrow? We'll check the board. Check the board. And then we'll show that the bear's not here. But essentially, this is...
Say something real quick. Those who are interested to look at the passbook, where I can explain what it is, as soon as you turn 16, right, you need it, yeah, and you have to carry it all the time. And if you are employed, your employer has to sign it every month. And if he didn't put a signature on the first, you can be locked up for 7 days. And that's, I've had it, you know, when I left the country and I kept it to share with people.
Yeah, I still have mine.
If you're interested, you know, it tells everything about you. When you want to get married, you need it wherever you go.
Yeah.
And if I want to live from California coming to Washington, I need to go get a permit to be here for certain days.
So that's true.
This monitors your movements. And again, if you need a passport then to travel abroad, you were required to pay $400 for you to obtain a passport in the pretense. Now, bear in mind, only blacks, Africans, should pay the money.
Yeah, nobody else does.
Nobody else does. So that creates an economic hardship if you have to go. And then don't make a mistake then and tell them you're going abroad to study. They'll tell you we have universities here.
Mm-hmm.
So and those of you who want to look at it, you know, feel welcome.
One thing we can do is tomorrow, when we do the next session, we will tell you our own personal experiences of going through it. Because I think that's the best way for people to learn. You know, this is how I went through. Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.